Is MSONewsports.com, and this is Connections, a chance to meet your North Shore neighbors. News, politics, left, center, right, newsmakers, people, issues, features. Connections on MSO News Sports.
Well, here we go on a beautiful Thursday. Hi, I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposkin. Of course, the voice of North Shore, Bill Newell. Bill will be along with us in just a few minutes. Very full program once again today, as we always have, trying to connect with North Shore newsmakers and entertainment and sports and all kinds of things, mostly to do with the North Shore. However, we have quite a lineup of guests this morning. We'll be talking, I hope, initially with Robin Reibel, the spokesperson for Sail Boston. As, of course, I think everybody in the area knows, that Sail Boston will be kicking off tomorrow with the Tall Ships Parade on Saturday and much more to talk about with that. We'll hopefully get a hold of Robin very quickly here. And then later on, Bill will talk with Michael Raworth. He is the president of Tall Ships America, to kind of fill in some of the blanks that I will probably be leaving after talking with Robin. Later on in the program, we'll have a nice in-depth interview with the publisher of the North of Boston Media Group, Karen Andreas. Of course, she is the publisher for both the Gloucester Times and the Salem News, and in addition, the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, the Newburyport Daily News, and other papers as well. And we'll have a talk with Karen, who will talk about the business, how it's changed, and what it means to the area. And, of course, we'll be checking in, as we do weekly, with Heather Atwood. Heather always has the story behind something, and she's got a couple of really cool stories today. So that's all upcoming here on MSO News Sports. Again, this is Connections. It's a brand-new program. I think we've made it 3 or 4 weeks in a row now, and Bill Newell will be joining me live here in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to try to talk with Robin Reibel. Again, she is the spokesperson for Sail Boston, of our Con Adventures group. So we'll take a break and see if we can make a connection here on Connections. You're listening to MSO News Sports, of course, and let's see what happens. So stay with us on this beautiful Thursday.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies, and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
All right, we're back, and not able to get a hold of Robin Reibel. Got a couple of phone numbers here to call, and she is the spokesperson for the Tall Ships coming into Boston, called Sail Boston, of course, on this weekend, and that's one of the many interviews we hope to have this morning. And joining us now is Bill Newell. Bill, good morning.
Hello, Rick. Good morning.
All right, we got a lot on the plate today here today, Bill, and Tall Ships, of course, coming into Boston Harbor. I actually saw the Tall Ships in 1976 for the Bicentennial, and I actually sat at the end of one of the runways at Logan Airport, which was right into the harbor. We had a fantastic, fantastic seat. Have you been to the Tall Ships parades at all?
Yeah, well, I that would have been a great place to watch. I remember years ago, Rick, They came, I got to think it had to have been around 1980. They were back in Boston and area, and some of them were mooring off into Hot. And, you know, you walk down to the rocky coastline there, right by the wharf in the town of Nahat, and you looked out there, and you say, wow, this is what it looked like, you know, back in, you know, 1776 or whatever it was. You know, it was, it's really quite remarkable. And by the way, just for our listeners, we'll have a post up just in just a little while with all the information and links to Sail Boston that, that you might want, as well as you know, we're going to be talking with, Michael Raworth from board director and president of Tall Ships America, which is really the, you know, is above kind of Sail Boston 2017. Anyways, he'll be joining us and a little bit later on in the program.
Sounds good. And I was surprised. I looked at the website, the Sail Boston website, and I was surprised at all the activities that are taking place. You know, being the ignorant person I am, I thought it was just the parade of sail that was taking place on Saturday, but there's a bunch of stuff going on for like 5 days. So we hope to check in with Robin on that, as well as hear the interview upcoming with Michael Raworth. Other stuff we've got coming up today, Bill, you and I sat down for a long chat with Karen Andreas, the publisher of the North of Boston Media Group, and we're going to play some of that interview today, but we're going to have a complete post of the entire interview with Karen as well. And besides, well, you know what? This might be Robin, Bill. Can I try to take it here?
Go ahead, yeah.
All right, let's...
Also,
yeah, this
also
is...
Live.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Hello, MSO.
Hi there. This is Robin Rybell from Sailbar.
Hi. That's okay, Robin. Hold on. We're actually live on the air. Bill, I'll chat with you later if that's okay.
You got it.
All right. Thanks, Bill. That is Bill Newell. And now Robin Rybell is a spokesperson for Sail Boston. She also is a senior public relations counsel for Conventures. And maybe before we talk about the Tall Ships, tell me a little bit about the business that you're in there, Robin, please.
Well, Conventures is Boston's leading communications and events management agency and has orchestrated and organized some of the biggest events in Boston over the last several years, including First Night and the Tufts 10K race and the Boston Seafood Festival. But in particular, we're very excited about being the organization that has brought the Tall Ships to Boston on a number of occasions.
Absolutely.
We cannot wait for tomorrow and the next day.
All right. I want to try to get you back at some point on Connections to talk about your business. But right now, let's talk about Sail Boston. And tell me a little bit about the seed, the germ of how this thing got started for this year's event.
Well, the Sail Boston executive director and also the president and founder of Conventures is Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty was sort of given a challenge, you know, over 20 years ago about, you know, how would you get these Tall Ships to Boston? How could we make an event of it? And she took that challenge to heart and really kind of, you know, sort of had this vision for what a, you know, huge maritime spectacle, you know, a whole group of magnificent vessels would be and what that could do for Boston in terms of really cementing its reputation as a world-class city. And so she was able to, you know, on a number of occasions in the late 1990s and then again in 2000, which was the last time a parade of sail of this magnitude took place, and then again in 2009, was able to organize this. And it's no small feat to organize because, as some of your listeners may have read, you know, there is no sort of NFL of tall ships where you go to and they organize it for you. You have to go to each embassy, to each governing body and, you know, convince them that this is the right thing to do because, you know, tall ships are very in demand. So she and the team have really been at this for, oh, I'd say the last several years, maybe 5 years in the making in this particular go-round. And it all comes together on Saturday when 55 tall ships parade into the harbor, and we hope, you know, thousands and thousands of spectators have a once-in-a-couple-decade experience.
Yeah, well, you know, I was there in 76 for the bicentennial, and I was just telling my partner Bill Newell that I sat on the end of the one of the runways at Logan Airport, and we were right, you know, right next to the ships coming in. But it is it's a juxtaposition. It's fantastic to see these magnificent vessels coming in, these majestic vessels, and then you've got the backdrop of the skyline of Boston. And tell us a little bit. I mean, I think probably the parade of sail is the highlight. So let's start there, and then we can talk about a few other things.
Sure. Okay. So the parade of sail. So the ships are sort of arriving at different times. It's part of a race. It's called the Rendezvous Tall Ships 2017 Regatta, which started in April from Royal Greenwich, England, then to Portugal, then to Bermuda, and they are, you know, now arriving from Bermuda over the next couple days. So they're all meant to be in formation somewhat north of Boston in Broad Sound prior, and then on Saturday morning, they form up and they start at 9 a.m. and sail into the harbor. So the first actual ship sighting, which is led by the U.S. Coast Guard Bark Eagle, would probably cross the North Jetty into the harbor right around 10 o'clock or so. Mm. And then from there till about the parade route takes them right into the harbor through the Seaport District to Charlestown, where they do their turnaround and then sail to their various berths around the Seaport District and the harbor, from East Boston to Charlestown to Rose Wharf, World Trade Center, Fan Pier, Fish Pier.
Robin, do you have recommendations? We're talking with Public Relations Senior Counsel Robin Rybell of Conventures about Sail Boston. She's the she's the spokesperson for Sail Boston. Do you have recommendations on where people, how people should watch these? In other words, get into town, maybe stay out of town. I don't know, but along the parade, the Boston Harbor Parade route, or maybe where to spend the weekend, that kind of thing. What are your recommendations in terms of viewing this thing?
Well, first of all, I would say, you know, this is meant to be, you know, a free, family-friendly event, and, you know, is meant to be enjoyed and is meant, you know, for everyone. You know, that said, there are, as many people will have read, you know, a number of security restrictions that have been put in place to keep it, you know, a safe and, you know, fantastic experience for everyone. So, you know, the first thing I would say is, you know, everybody should do their homework. Go on the various websites, sailboston.com. We have an app. You know, just download the app from the App Store. The Sail Boston is the name of it. Go to the MBTA's website and so on. There's lots of information out there. And make a plan for your travel. I would leave the cars home. I would plan. There's very, very little parking. There'll be lots and lots of road restrictions and closures, and everyone should plan to understand that everyone will be screened. There also, on all these websites, are a list of prohibited items, mm-hmm. what you can bring and what you can't bring.
Okay.
Please make yourself aware of these things so that there's not disappointment and so forth. The other thing I would say is that there is, you know, because there's no parking and because, you know, everyone is relying on public transportation. And there are, you know, if you do go to the Sail Boston website, you'll see that there are shuttle buses and so forth. But there is some walking involved. So people should be aware of that. And I've shared that, you know, with those who have asked us about it. So I would say, so all of that would logically lead anyone that was contemplating coming for a visit to set out early. You know, because the earlier the better, the quicker the lines will move at the screening points and so forth.
Okay.
So once they do all that, I would say, you're here. You know, there are lots of great locations, you know, for people to collect at, okay. And you know, one of them is Castle Island, you know, which should be a terrific place for viewing.
Okay.
And the website has, lots of other locations.
So, all right.
Low Prestige Park, and there, Charlestown, and so forth.
Finally, Robin, there are the Parade of Sail is not the only thing going on with this festival, the Sail Boston Festival. So would you like to touch on any of the other events?
Oh, absolutely, I would. You know, it's really a very exciting 5 days. So so once the Parade of Sail concludes, which is about 3 p.m. in the afternoon or so. And by the way, I'll just give one plug to our partner, if you don't mind, at WCVB-TV. They are planning live coverage of the Parade of Sail, you know, starting in the morning on their newscast, but then live from 9 a.m. to noon. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if for some reason you don't make it down, you can watch. And, mm-hmm. and I would suggest that folks might want to do that. So after the vessels have finished the parade and they're in their berths, the free and open public boarding will really kick into gear on Sunday, which is Father's Day and might be a great day for folks to, you know, make a lovely day of it. And there will be, like, as you mentioned, all the, you know, the restaurants are all prepared for the crowds. There's, like, lots of, like, opportunities to purchase food. There's even a special Sam Adams beer that's been brewed just for us. It's called Tall Ships Ale, which will be available down here at the seaport for purchase, and so forth. So those are some of the amenities. And then there's a wreath laying in honor of fallen heroes on Sunday morning, and then there's festivities all day long, which means, you know, sort of entertainment and, again, the food that's available, exhibits, all kinds of things going on.
All right.
And I just want to mention, on Monday, there's a cadet and crew parade. So, you know, crew members from all the ships, which are, you know, besides the United States, 14 countries are represented, and that'll start in the seaport and march right into the heart of Downtown Crossing. So that's something people, you know, usually love to see.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to grab all that stuff from the Sail Boston website. We're going to refer people to it, and
absolutely,
we're going to show all those activities that are coming up. We're happy to promote that. And,
oh, thank you.
Absolutely. And Robin, geez, thanks for taking the time. And I know how busy you got to be today.
I'm happy to do it.
Especially since we both got confused on what day of the week it was
so
this week.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it was my fault.
No. So I appreciate it, and I hope I can call you back at some point in the future when things calm down a little bit, and we can just talk about the company you work for.
Oh, I'd love to do that anytime. So nice chatting with you.
All right. Take care, Robin.
Okay,
thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That is Robin Rybell, who is the spokesperson for Sail Boston. She works for Con Ventures, and again, Sail Boston kicking off actually today. The opening ceremony is today. The Boston Harbor, the fireboat ceremony, spraying water as a backdrop. The opening ceremony will kick off Boston Sail Boston 2017. Ceremonial welcome with a speaking program to follow, which will be a blessing of the sails and a presentation of flags from each country. That's today, Boston Harbor Hotel Rotunda, and that is at noontime. In Boston, of course, Sail Boston starting. And still to come, Bill Newell will be talking with the Tall Ships America president, Michael Raworth, coming up in just a few minutes. So happy you're with us this morning, and please stay with us. This is MSO News Sports.
Game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Bill Newell, joined by Michael Raworth from Tall Ships America. He's their president and board chair. And Michael, welcome. Great to be talking with you.
Good to be talking to you, Bill.
Well, huge event coming up for the Boston area this coming weekend with the Sail Boston, with the Tall Ships, Parade of Sail, and so on. And I guess, tell me about your organization, Tall Ships America, and how it interacts with Sail Boston and so on.
Sure. We serve as the advocacy organization for the fleet of sailing ships in North America. We've got a number of member organizations all around the coasts of the Great Lakes, the Atlantic Coast, the Gulf Coast, the Pacific Coast. And we also are the organizers of what every year is called the Tall Ships Challenge. And this year, Sail Boston is a part of that. We had an earlier event a few weeks ago in Charleston. And basically, we organize the offshore components of these events, the races between the ports, and then we have agreements with local organizers in each port to do their local festivals because of their local expertise. And in those events, we largely attend to the interests of the ships to make sure that they're being taken care of and their trainees are being taken care of, because most of these ships are operated for the purposes of sail training, kind of a character development enterprise, and that's really the driver of this whole phenomenon.
Now, the ships are coming. Are they all coming across the Atlantic on this race, or some mixing in from other places?
Oh no, they're coming from various locations. There are quite a number that have crossed the Atlantic. This fleet began in the UK in April and has made several stops in Europe, and then stopped most recently in Bermuda. And it was joined there by a fleet of vessels that were involved in our organization's event in Charleston, South Carolina. And then there's, in addition, at least two ships from South America that I'm able to recall, a brand new ship from Peru, and then a ship of, if you will, long-standing, a regular player in these events from Chile.
I want to talk about the Parade of Sail in just a moment with you in more detail, but from a North Shore perspective, and so I'm talking about from Newburyport really all the way down to, say, Winthrop, right to Boston, what are the viewing options, or what could people be looking for around the North Shore here this weekend?
Well, actually, the most North Shore-centric event will be on Thursday, which is the start of the race following Sail Boston that will go into Canada and carry the fleet to its, if you will, its high point destination, because this whole 2017 event is done as a celebration commemorating the 150th anniversary of the founding of modern Canada, which is done off Prince Edward Island on the 1st of July of 1867. So there's going to be big events in Canada, and those will obviously follow on Sail Boston. But the race itself is going to start off of Cape Ann. It'll be late in the day on Thursday. And it's been relocated up there basically to diminish the congestion, because when you get big square-rigged ships jockeying around a race starting line, you don't want to be tripping over your shoelaces.
And that you're talking about that being this Thursday, right?
A week from tomorrow, yes.
Oh, a week from, on the 22nd. I got you. And that's
following Sail Boston. I mean, the Sail Boston events run through through a full day of Wednesday, and then the ships begin to depart Thursday, a week from tomorrow, on the 22nd.
Right.
Now, there will be some activity to be observed on the North Shore, but it will be largely the southern portion of the North Shore, because the vessels will be coming to anchor. And they're going to need to be anchored the bulk of Friday, day after tomorrow, around Nahant, and some in a little bit in the direction of Swampscott, and that is basically to get them into position to form up for the Parade of Sail, and to be cleared in by the Customs and Immigration authorities. So the vessels may be actually sailing around, just doing exercises with their crews beforehand, perhaps as early as Thursday, the 15th, but possibly on Friday the 16th as well. But they need to be tucked into their anchorages certainly by midday on Friday to get the customs formalities out of the way. So they'll be visible from the coastal routes along the coast of Revere, and from in part from the Linway in Lynn, and then on up North Shore Drive into Swampscott.
Sounds good. Now, the Parade of Sail itself is a very rare thing for this area, correct?
Yes. In fact, it's so rare that the all other traffic in the harbor is shut down. There will be no ship traffic during the time of the Parade of Sail. And obviously that has implications for maritime commerce, so it is not done very often.
And that's Saturday from 9 to 3, I see. And we'll have links on our website at in the next day or so to for folks to take a look at that stuff. Yeah.
Right, okay. Right.
Well, anything, you know, you know these ships. I mean, I'm sure you know a lot of them. Is there, what's the most unique or one or two of the most unique things that will be, you know, in Boston this week?
Well, the ship that sort of caught my eye is the newest one that I mentioned earlier from Peru. Its name is Union, and I met their former skipper at a meeting in D.C. early in May, and he was very proud of the ship because it was fabricated entirely in South America and constructed in Peru. And, you know, you don't think of these ships as being modern creations, but this one definitely is. And some of the others have been built, you know, in the last 20 years or so. But they continue to be built because of the continuing value that the governments see in getting their young and up-and-coming mariners this experience on big sailing ships because of the seamanship that it imbues in them and the qualities of leadership that they get from that experience.
You know, that's very interesting because if, you know, I've been down to Norfolk, Virginia, you see these huge Navy ships, I think it was Norfolk, and they must be all computerized, you know, navigation and all of that. And so it is completely different than what you'd be doing on one of these ships.
Well, that's true, but even Navy ships demand high levels of seamanship these days. And in many other nations, the naval officers go through training on big sailing ships as a precursor to their experience in their totally diesel-powered fleets. And of course, all graduates of our Coast Guard Academy go through the experience of training on America's tall ship, the Eagle, because of the value, once again, that the Coast Guard sees in giving their officers that experience, even though they're not going to be working under sail, most of them, in their future.
Wow. Now, Michael, just maybe a final question or two here, but tell me about your journey, which led you and experiences that led you to become president board chair of Tall Ships America. What's your sailing background, so to speak?
Well, when I got out of college, I went into the Coast Guard and was on a Coast Guard icebreaker and went to the Arctic and the Antarctic. And when I left active duty, I thought that I wanted to get some more of this seamanship into my blood, so I went and got a commercial credential, a merchant marine officer's license, and sailed on that in various capacities. And then in 1980, there was an oil crisis and a resurgence in the interest in sail as a power method for commercial vessels. In fact, they were doing what we would today call hybrid organizations, where you'd have a diesel-powered ship that would save fuel by using sails under certain circumstances. And I thought I wanted to be involved in that, so I managed to get some active duty on the Eagle related to my earlier Coast Guard experience, and built that into time as an officer on various other large sailing ships. And that led me to have a credential for sailing ships that I maintain now. That is a master's license. And so I found myself drawn into the world of Tall Ships America and eventually was asked to be its president.
Great. Michael, anything else you want to share with us that I did not ask you about that you think might be of interest or note that folks should know about this coming these days ahead here in the Boston area?
Well, the event is going to be a very big one. I just want to emphasize for the if you will, the safety and the convenience of everybody. This is going to be a lot of congestion on the streets of Boston, and the police have already announced closures and so forth. So it's very much in order that people take public transportation, because the street traffic is going to be very, very, very challenging. And there's plenty of observation areas, but there are lists of prohibited objects for those observation areas that are posted on the Sail Boston website, and I would encourage everybody to consult that website. There's also pictures of the ships and little histories of them that are very good on the Sail Boston website. But if you're going to come down to the event as opposed to watching it on TV, then you want to be very careful to make sure what you're carrying conforms to those lists because of the very obvious safety and security considerations that the public safety officials will have to be enforcing.
Yeah, and we'll have links on our website to those links. You are right; it is a great resource, and folks should head to that if they are at all interested in any of this. Well, Michael, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck. Have a great week.
Thank you very kindly. Yeah. You.
Yep, Michael Raworth, the president, board chair of Tall Ships America, here with us on MSO News Sports.
Wow. All right. So there you go. The Sail Boston coming up actually beginning today with the grand opening, but the parade of sail is on Saturday. That is tomorrow. And if you're listening to this one way or the other, either live as we do it on Thursday or on demand, you can see right under our, or right above, I should say, our link. We've got links to Sail Boston. Robin Rybell, the spokesperson for Sail Boston, tells us how to get there and all kinds of great information if you listen in. And again, that is sailboston.com. And then the other link we have, of course, among others, the other link is to Michael Raworth's organization, Tall Ships America. Still to come, we're going to be talking with Karen Andreas later on. She's the publisher of the North of Boston Media Group, along with Heather Atwood, the managing editor of The Other Cape, who always has the story behind the story.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Continuing with Connections, I'm Rick Moore, along with Heather Atwood today, with the story behind the story behind something. Heather always has a story, don't you?
I do. I have a story. I have a tiny story behind a story today. But I have a lot of other regular stories.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are once again at the Pleasant Street Tea Company, and let's start with the article that was in the paper, the Gloucester Times this week, about a video, a fish video. Do I have that right?
Five fish videos. Well, actually, four recipes and one introduction by the renowned fishing commissioner of Gloucester, Al Cotone.
Okay. All right, so a little background on all this.
So, last summer, I participated in a workshop that was run by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. And it was called Local Food, Local Places. It was a program that was supposed to, that was awarded to certain cities in which they were going to investigate how to rebuild, rework, redo their local food systems. So I sat around with a lot of people in the city at City Hall. We broke into workshops or tables and in a workshop, and we all had conversations about what can we do? What can we do to improve our local food systems? And a bunch of us had the idea of creating some cooking videos because, you know, that's where my head goes. So I got in touch with my really wonderful friend, Annie Copps. Annie Copps is really, she's an exquisite chef. She's a great chef. She's worked at Olive's, at Todd English's restaurants, you know, many others. But more recently, she's been the executive editor at Boston Magazine and food editor at Yankee Magazine. She's done a lot of stints on the Today Show. I've seen her bake apple pies in the middle of Times Square for national television. She's really talented. She's very funny. She's incredibly entertaining. So I just knew she would be great talking about Gloucester fish.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So how do we view these videos?
So all you need to do, I'll just go on. So we made these cooking videos. Al Cotone brought four local fish, pollock, whiting, redfish, and flounder. to my kitchen, and Annie produced these recipes. They're her recipes. She created the recipes, and then she cooked each of them. They were produced and directed by Jordan Gary, videographer, and he's a local guy also. And so each of the recipes is a freestanding video. And you can go to the Gloucester Fresh website. That is a city-run website, and the videos are there. You can watch the videos. You can get the recipes. And they're all, you know, as I said to the Gloucester Times this week, we really wanted something updated. We wanted recipes that were a little bit more modern, really easy for the home cook, but just kind of had a little bit more 2017 to them, you know.
I'm always interested in the technical part of it. How long did it take you to put together a 4 or 5 minute video?
It took all day, but we did, I'm trying to think, you know, we did the 4 cooking videos and the 1 introduction with Al Catone, and it was a long day.
Mm-hmm.
There
were
a lot.
In one day.
We did them all in one day,
oh, okay.
Yeah, but it takes a lot. Okay. But the reason it actually didn't take forever was because Annie Copps is so good. I mean, I think we did each of them in one take. There were no retakes because she just talks. She knows what she's saying. She's clear. She knows her food. She's brilliant. She's really good.
Sounds like someone else I know. We're down to number 31 and 30?
We are at 31 and 30. 31 is prosciutto. Now, you know what prosciutto is because your wife is Italian. You don't know. Oh, my gosh. He's looking at the ceiling. That is just shocking.
I do, but I just... You say it better.
I really hope your wife isn't listening to this show. Okay, so prosciutto is Parma ham. It is ham...
Oh, with olives in it and stuff?
No. It's produced in Parma, Italy, and it has one of those designations where it cannot be... You can't call it Parma ham. You can't call a Virginia ham a Parma ham. It can only be called Parma if it's created in Parma, Italy. And it is...
Are you sure about that?
Yes, I'm positive about that, actually. the other things can be called prosciutto, because what it is, a Parma ham is a prosciutto, which is a cured leg of a pig. So it is not cooked, it's cured. All it is, if it's done the right way, is a lot of salt is rubbed on the outside, and it's hung for at least 12 months in a dark place in Parma. Okay, it has to be in Parma. Now, lots of places create prosciutto. There's domestic prosciutto, and but you can't call them a Parma ham. So I think for the purposes of number one, or 31, I mean, we can say prosciutto because it's just simply really popular.
Okay.
But I do have one little... This is where my story goes. We're going to fit my tiny little story in here.
Yeah, cool.
So one of the very traditional ways of serving prosciutto, at least in Italy, is wrapped around a piece of melon. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Yep. So cantaloupe, traditionally cantaloupe, but sometimes watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in Italy, that is a famous thing to serve. Beautiful wedges of cantaloupe with these paper-thin pieces of prosciutto laying over
them.
Now, the Italians have very, very specific ideas about digestion. I mean, they're obsessed with digestion.
Mm-hmm.
They believe you have to eat in certain things to have it all digest well. Well, they actually believed until... probably the 18th century, that you would die if you ate cantaloupe by itself. You actually had to eat it with prosciutto.
See, I believe that. That's one thing I do believe.
That is what's really funny about you. Exactly. So they thought it would chill your organs.
So it's not true then. Okay. Damn.
So you're going to run out and get a piece of ham to put over that piece of watermelon you have now, right?
Now I'll have it, yeah.
Right. So, no, they thought it would chill your organs and that you would die.
Okay.
So you had to eat prosciutto with your cantaloupe.
Well, it certainly makes sense to me.
And you and a lot of Italians.
There you go.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm sure there are many who still think that, by the way.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of vegetables. If you eat them alone, they'll kill you.
Exactly.
Right?
True.
You got to put them in... French dressing, and then it works. Okay, so number, what are we down to, 30?
30 is, I'm not even going to try to say the Vietnamese name for Vietnamese spring rolls.
What is it called?
Vietnamese spring rolls.
Okay.
I will spell it. G-O-I word C-O-I-N, I think. So goi, quan, mm-hmm. something like that. But I do know them well. They are absolutely delicious. Again, we're back in Southeast Asia, where mm-hmm. the voting really seems to have happened on this,
right.
You know, 1 through 50 list. But these spring rolls are really beautiful. They are not the fried kind. They are a little bundle of fresh, usually fresh herbs like mint and basil, with maybe a little piece of chicken, maybe a piece of shrimp, a little bit of very finely chopped lettuce. So really fresh, fresh tastes inside this little bundle, which is wrapped in a rice paper wrap. So it's cool tasting, it's fresh tasting, and then you dip it in some sort of savory sauce. It usually has fish sauce in it. They are delicious. I love making them.
That sounds does. Now, so how many of these on the top 50? Let's see, we've gone from 30 to 50. You've sampled most of this stuff?
No. I did not sample the stinky tofu. I haven't had the stinky
Thank
tofu.
God.
Yeah, I know. I don't remember which. And that was up there. Well, that was the beginning of the list. I'd say maybe three quarters of these things I've had. Yeah.
And the green fried crab, you actually had that?
That was not on this list, but I have had that.
You had the green
yes.
Fried
in fact, there's going to be another fried soft shell green crab night at Woodman's this coming Monday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So. You heard it here first. Okay. Update on the other Cape.
So the other Cape, right now we have a story up about Innovation House in Magnolia. Do you know about Innovation House? Well, it's a pretty cool story. This tech guy, he invented the browser Opera. His name is Jan von Techner. He knew nothing about Gloucester. He was living in Norway. He's originally from Iceland. He was living in Norway, and he created this Opera browser. It did really, really well. It had tons of fans. People, I mean, I did not understand when I wrote this that one could be a fan of a browser, but it's kind of a culty thing. And the Opera browser did really well. So it was, it went public. It went through that whole thing. And so, you know, it was a huge success. And then Jan von Techner was very upset because the new board kind of did not treat his employee as well, and he's the people who believes in his people. He's the person who believes in his people. Sorry. So he left Opera, and he roamed around a little bit trying to figure out where he would live. Now, this is a man who grew up in Iceland and then lived for maybe 20 years in Norway, but he's a tech guy, so he's looking over there at Silicon Valley, right? But there's no way an Icelander could live in Silicon Valley. So he landed in Gloucester. Yeah, so he says that Gloucester looks a lot. He said the ocean looks like Iceland, and the snow looks like Norway. So he loves it here, and he has started something over in Magnolia called Innovation House. He has built a new browser called Vivaldi. Vivaldi, which is also incredibly popular with it's a pretty large user group.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in the month of June, he has all his Vivaldi team in Norway come to Magnolia and stay at Innovation House, and you'll see them, like all these very Scandinavian-looking people running around Magnolia and Gloucester. But he also invites people to come to Innovation House. Startups, you know, wanting advice can come there.
Mm-hmm.
He has a separate Innovation House in Iceland. And he invites Iceland. He uses the Innovation House here as a place for Icelanders to set up camp in the U.S.
This is on the other Cape, so we don't want to give too much away.
I'm sorry, right. Okay, end of story. That's it.
Okay.
You have to go to the other Cape to read more.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you have to go to the other Cape to see the fabulous picture taken by Jason Groh of Jan von Techner.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. And the other Cape website?
The other Cape, www.theothercape.com.
Okay. Okay, and let's see here. A couple of other things. You mentioned last week Happy Belly.
Yes. The Serenity Group has done it again. They have opened. I think the official opening, I shouldn't say have opened. The official opening is tomorrow for Happy
Thursday.
Belly. Yes, Thursday. Okay. Right. Yeah, this will air tomorrow. So I went to one of the many sort of debut dinners last week, and it's going to be a very fun place. What is the funnest part of it is it's open from 7 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. So they do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if any of us were around for the Glass Sailboat and the Sunny Day Cafe, do you ever go to either
Glass
one
Sailboat,
of those?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it was a great place to go at 9 o'clock in the morning. You'd see some people. You'd get a cup of coffee and a blueberry muffin, just as we do here. And it was a good communal place, and I miss that. So that will be back. Along with smoothies and there's all kinds of fancy coffee drinks.
Did you want to mention an upcoming event at the end of the month?
June 29th. Yes, I do. This is really something that's close to my heart because the city of Gloucester, is honored to have in residence now Barbara Lynch. Now, you were nodding blandly, but if you're a cook or an eater, like sort of a gourmet kind of eater, you would know Barbara Lynch. She has a restaurant empire in Boston. She is nationally, if not internationally, acclaimed at this point as a really, truly great chef. And her story is incredible, absolutely incredible. She was raised in the projects in South Boston, and she has, you know, elevated to this very, very lofty place. And she never graduated from high school. Forget college, not even high school. She had a tough start, and she has a new memoir out. I will interview her tomorrow, so there'll be a little bit of discussion about this memoir in the Other Cape and the Gloucester Times. Awesome. Okay. But she is doing a talk on June 29th at 7 o'clock at the bookstore in Gloucester.
And we will mention that again.
Yeah.
Well, that's a full interview with Heather Atwood with the story behind the story. This is MSO News Sports.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
All right, just wiping the egg off my face. I loaded the wrong interview. That's from last week. So I apologize to Heather and to our listening audience, and I will post Heather's new interview that we did this week. I'll post that right here on this page when we go on demand. Lots of brand new stuff that Heather talks about, and we'll get that stuff right up there. Today or tomorrow. Very busy day today. We got baseball coming up this afternoon. Danvers will be playing Greater New Bedford Tech, I believe it is, this afternoon. Division II state championship at 4 o'clock. Bill Newell will have plenty more on that. I'll be there along with Bill as well. That's still to come. And still to come, we have the interview with the North of Boston Media Group publisher, and that is Karen Andreas, whose son is one of the captains and all-star and all-scholastic all athlete, all everything for Danvers High School, among so many other players. And we've got that coming up. We've got part of the interview coming up with Karen in just a minute, and then we'll run the whole interview later on in a separate post. So thanks for being with us. We continue here on Connections. This is MSO News Sports. In the office now of Karen Andreas, who is the regional publisher for the North of Boston Media Group. I'm Rick Moore with Bill Newell and Ms. Andreas. And Karen, first of all, welcome to MSO and thank you for letting us in.
Thank you. It is my pleasure.
What we do when we do these little segments here for MSO is we like to ask our guests how they got to where they are, a little biography perhaps on your personal education, and then how you got into the business of where you are now and the position you're in.
Absolutely. I went to the University of New Hampshire and fell in love with journalism there. I was actually undecided on my career path, and my college guidance counselor was in the journalism program, Jane Harrigan, a wonderful journalist herself, and she guided me into the journalism program. I did really well in my English classes, and I loved writing, and I began writing for the New Hampshire, the school newspaper. Mm-hmm. And that's where I really fell in love with journalism. I did a couple of internships at the Boston Globe and at the Daily News of Newburyport, which is actually one of my papers now. So I started at this company as an intern back in 1987 when I was a junior in college. It was a wonderful summer. I remember my first story. I walked into the newsroom, nervous intern, and my first story was a first person on a new kayaking company. And they said, go home and change, put on shorts and a T-shirt, and go kayaking for the day, and write about this new business. And I thought, this is the greatest career in the world. I get to go kayaking for the day. It was wonderful. And then the next night, they sent me to the Rowley Zoning Board. So I got a real dose of reality on what it's like to be a journalist. You know, never the same thing from one day to the next. So I went to UNH and started as an intern and started working. My first real job out of college was at the Beverly Times. You might remember the old Beverly Times, an Ottawa newspaper. I was a reporter there for several years and then sort of moved through the editing ranks. And I went to, the Ottawa purchased the family-owned Salem Evening News from The New Begins. And at that time, Ottawa had Beverly, Newburyport, and Gloucester. And Peabody. The Peabody Times also, that's right. And then we purchased the Salem Evening News and merged Peabody, Beverly, and Salem into what is now the Salem News. So I worked for Ottawa for 15 years and sort of went through the newsroom, reporter, city editor, managing editor, etc. And then the Rogers family, which owned the Eagle Tribune Publishing Company, purchased the the Ottawa-owned Salem News and Gloucester and Newburyport, and merged everything into Eagle Tribune Publishing Company. And at that point, I became the editor of the Salem News for a number of years. And then the Rogers family asked me to be the executive editor and vice president of news for the company. So I took over doing that, and I was in charge of the 10 newsrooms. We had 206 newsroom employees at the time. And then we were purchased by what is now our current owner, CNHI, Community Newspaper Holdings Incorporated, out of Alabama. So CNHI owns our company now, and several years ago they asked me to be the publisher of the Salem News, and then more recently, about 4 or 5 years ago, took over as the regional publisher for the whole company, the North of Boston Media Group.
Okay, you got all that, Bill, did you write all that down?
I
have one more question before.
That wasn't too much.
Oh, no, not at all. But what I'm curious about, Karen, is it's one thing to be a journalist, but then it's also something else to be a business person. How did you learn the business of all of this?
I learned the business really from the ground up. And I'll tell you, being a journalist was the best education I could have, because I had a natural curiosity, but I also have a healthy skepticism, and I'm not afraid at all to ask questions. So if I don't know something, as a journalist, that's what you do, right? You ask questions. So I've just had this natural curiosity, and if a business report came across my desk and I didn't understand it or thought, why do we do it this way? Maybe we should try it this way. So I came at it from a journalist standpoint, which really helped me a lot. That said, I have wonderful people that I work with who are great teachers and great mentors to me as well, and are way smarter than I am, and I try not to get in their way. So they have their own individual strengths. We have our advertising director is the best ever, Mark Zappala. He's fabulous. Our IT director, John Gregory. I could go on and on. Steve Malone, audience director with circulation. So I am surrounded by the most talented, smart, great people who help me along the way.
Mm-hmm. All right, so here's the big question here. I mean, not really the big question, but in the big picture. So you're this company that owns the Salem News and the Newburyport paper and Gloucester Times owns a lot of newspapers. So how is that business? How is the business changed or changing as we speak?
The business changes every day, and sometimes it feels like it changes by the hour or the minute. The digital has changed everything for us, and we really had to look at our business model and know that, like every business, we have to change with the times. And so we were, several years ago, we were strictly a newspaper company. We published newspapers. That's what we did. And now we are a multimedia company. We publish newspapers, but we also publish 24/7 on all of our digital platforms, whether it's a desktop or your phone or a tablet. We also have magazines. We have 15 community magazines, Marblehead, Home and Style, Newburyport Magazine, Cape Ann Magazine, etc. So we have really tried to diversify and keep up with the times. So, a lot of times people will say to me, well, gee, it seems like not that many people are reading newspapers anymore. Is it a dying industry, etc.? Absolutely not, is always my answer. It is very true that fewer people are reading the print newspaper, but more and more people are reading the local news. They just choose to read it however they want to read it, whether it's on their phone, on their tablet, or through text messages that we send out, through Twitter, etc. So we're still gathering that news and providing that hyper-local content to our audience, but over a very diversified platform.
Along with that, one of the things that that I learned in Journalism 101, that's the only course I took, by the way.
Well,
I hope so. Was getting information out, and you know, there's a competition like among all media and getting the story out the first and quickest. But in today's digital age, you've got to be really careful with that, and especially with the instantaneous news you have now. You've got people on the scene with phones who are going to be there sometimes before your reporters. So I'm guessing it's a real battle on making sure you get the right information, because a lot of stuff gets published out there on Facebook. I even saw the Boston Globe put out some bad information during the marathon bombing. So that's something that I imagine people know how to do that now, but it's something you have to be cognizant of.
Always. It's a great question. And I always tell the team here, I don't care about being first. I care about being right. I want to be accurate and fair and have integrity with what we do. We live here. I live in Danvers. Dave Olson lives in Gloucester. Richard Lodge, the editor of Newburyport, lives in Newburyport. We live here. We care about these communities. I'm going to see people at church and at the grocery store and at my son's ball games. And it matters to me that we are accurate and fair and provide content that is of the utmost integrity and ethics. So if we make a mistake, we feel terrible about it, but we will absolutely correct it, and we will apologize to you, often to your face or on the phone. And a lot of media companies really can't say that. Sometimes when you read blogs or websites, you're not even sure who the author is. You know, if we print something and it's wrong or right, you can call me and say, hey, Karen, I really loved that. Or why did you write that headline? And our readers are so passionate, and I love that. They will call. And I always say, if the phone stops ringing, then I'm in trouble. But people will call or email all the time about what they love about their newspaper and what they don't like about it. And that matters a lot to me. So the issue of getting that news out there quickly, of course we want to be responsive and quick, but we want to be right and accurate. That is first and foremost for me. Even we always say in the newsroom, when in doubt, leave it out. Look, if you're not sure of a fact, don't write it. We can always check into it and put it in later. When in doubt, leave it out. That's what's most important to me. We need to be fair and accurate.
You know, one thing I was thinking of is I've thought about this a lot, and as you were speaking, you've sort of addressed this, but the value of having, let's use the Salem News as an example, that paper, it is kind of the paper of record for a region, in Essex County. And there are other papers that are maybe a paper of record the Tribune, Lawrence Eagle Tribune, and so on.
And that's mine too.
Exactly.
So I have the Tribune in the Merrimack Valley and in southern New Hampshire. Yes.
But what I'm saying is that with an evolving landscape of how people access news, as you were just talking about, who you're standing with when you're with the Salem News or the reporters. They put their name on it. It's a company. It's a business. It's a community business.
It's Phil Stacey. Yeah. It's Ethan Foreman. Yeah. It's Matt Williams. It's Paul Layton. These are people who live here again and have their families and friends are here. Mm-hmm. And we take great pride in having our name front and center.
And are here every day too. You know what I mean? Big stories break, and I get it. I mean, people come in and cover things, that's fine. They have a different role, like whether it's a fire, like in Lawrence, all the TV stations were there obviously over the weekend. But you guys are there every day, I'm sure. And so what I'm saying is that we can't lose the local papers. I mean, I know I'm an older, we're from an older generation, Rick and myself, but we kind of grew up with that piece. And like, you want to be able to have that record. You know what I'm saying?
I absolutely agree. We are the paper of record in the community for, Gloucester for the Cape Ann community, Newburyport for the greater Newburyport area, the Salem News, of course, here for the North Shore region. And it is so important that these local papers are viable and healthy and respected in the community. Yeah. And we work every single day to be respected in the community. And like I said, I know we do make mistakes sometimes, but we'll always fix it, and you can always rest assured that we will give you 100%.
All right, that's the first part of an interview that Bill and I did with Karen Andreas, the publisher of North Boston Media Group, this week, and we'll have the complete interview. And I know that we were disconnected there for a time. Cable went out locally, and we're at the mercy of our provider, and our provider went down too. We also have a backup, and the provider went down. So we apologize, but Karen's complete interview will be posted later on this weekend. I'm heading out in just a few minutes as we're going to be covering baseball tonight. It'll be Danvers versus Greater New Bedford Regional Volk. Greater New Bedford Regional Volk with a record of 18-7, I think it is, and Danvers with a record of 24-6. And it's down in Brockton, so it's a 4 o'clock game that you'll hear here on MSO. Bill's putting a post up as we speak, and so you'll be able to check that out. But again, the complete interview with Karen Andreas coming up later on during today or the weekend as we can post it. And thank you for being with us. I want to thank Karen Andreas, of course, her son participating in the baseball game tonight, and all of the North Shore, North East Conference in particular, rooting for Coach Roger Day and the Danvers Falcons today. Thanks to Sail Boston's spokesperson, Robin Rybell, and also to Mike Raworth, who is the president of Tall Ships America, and to Heather Atwood, and Heather's interview will be posted separately here today, very quickly as well. So thank you all. Don't forget Connections. We try to put it on most Thursdays here on MSO, and should be back next week, although we got St. Peter's Fiesta, lots of other activities going on as well. So on behalf of all of our guests, thank you very much. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Bill Newell. Thanks to Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer. I'm Rick Moore. Have a terrific, Thursday? Have a terrific Thursday. Take care.